Welcome to This Week in FX PhD, your weekly wrap-up and behind the scenes at fxphd.com.
Hi, and welcome to This Week at FX PhD. John Montgomery with you, joined as always by Mike. How's it going, my friend?
Good. Going really well, actually.
Yeah. Did I just stumble on your name just then?
What?
Did I just stumble on your name?
I don't think so.
Okay.
But if you did, my friend, it's fine with me. Stumble away.
It's only been working 7 years.
A lifetime.
It is.
Well, I think you've known me longer than 7 years, my friend.
Oh, yes. More than seven. But the DOD.
Oh, I see. Okay. Yep.
And now, This Week at FX PhD, as we have renamed it. But yes, happy to be at the LA office for, well, just a week before heading off to FMX. Very much looking forward to that, touching base with all our European friends and members and folks. Should be fun next week.
Absolutely, yeah. It's a terrific thing. But you're going to get some time to go to London, right?
Possibly, yeah. We haven't actually worked that out. We were thinking that, I think we talked last week in the DOD, that hopefully I was going to head there for at least one day, get maybe the scoop on Nuke Studio, if we can get a little bit more details of that, get some stuff on camera with John and the rest of the Foundry team. But we're still working out the details, making sure everyone's going to be there and available, frankly. So if I'm going to spend the time and money to spend an extra day in London, hope they'll be there. But yeah, that would be a good event. And actually, if we do that, we'll actually try and do maybe a bit of a gathering. I'm glad you mentioned that, because we'll try and do a meetup in the UK for those people who can't actually make it to FMX. And I know that's actually quite a few people. But we would try to do that on, I'm looking at the calendar now. That would be, say, Monday the 28th of April, actually.
Okay,
so there's a possibility for a meetup in London on Monday, April 28th. Not sure about that, but we'll definitely have a meetup in Stuttgart, for those of you who are adding to FMX. That will be either Wednesday evening the 23rd or Thursday evening the 24th. Still working out the details on that. We'll post on the FMX thread that's in the student lounge, and also probably tweet it in my Twitter feed, as well as the @FXPHE Twitter feed as well.
Excellent.
And just a heads up, yeah, I mean, I have added, we lost that a bit with redesign on FXPHD, but I've added back the @FXPHD Twitter feed to every forums page. And since it's on every page, we really try and create a low volume, low noise informational feed, I guess you can say, about stuff you really need to know. So if you want to also follow FXPHD, that's a good idea if you're one of them Twitterers, which I know many of you are. But that's, again, just thought it'd be a good idea to add that to the forums page to keep you guys up to date if there's something wrong. It's also very useful if there is something wrong with the site or you can't reach the site for some reason. As soon as we find out about that, we post the FXPHD feed that the site is down, and then post there as well once it's back up and running.
Yeah, no, it's sometimes it's like a really good thing, the immediacy of Twitter, for just being able to hook up with people.
Unless you happen to be at a music festival in the middle of the desert and actually don't happen to notice that one of your servers is down, which this weekend I'm referring, our podcast server was down for about 20 hours.
I knew it was down, and I was posting
you just didn't
to people.
Yeah.
I just couldn't get it up.
No, and you didn't.
I
mean, actually, you were being kind of kind,
often,
kind to me. Okay. No, that is true. But yes, I think you were actually also being kind of kind to not bother me with that on a Sunday. Maybe you were, or maybe you thought I and assumed I knew. But
no, actually, I thought you've been working really hard. It's a Sunday. If it was going to take, actually, it was going to take 12 hours, but I was going to say, if it was down for 12 hours, that was a small price to pay. After all, I don't want to not have great service, but, you know, the price of you having no time off ever is quite a high price to pay. So if it had been the whole site down, I definitely would have, got someone to drive over and
yeah,
find
and just so people know, we actually, Ryan is familiar with how to do such things as well. But Yours truly actually had not updated some notes, and we had a bug, so actually the process that Ryan went through during the happening actually didn't work. So it was kind of a perfect storm of things happening. But anyway, yes, that's what we do with the Twitter feeds. It's a good way to keep people up to date on what's happening. So both the FX PhD feed, and then there's also one FX Guide News is another one as well that we keep people updated, not just about new articles, but also when things aren't going quite correctly with the site, which it may seem like it happens a lot, but it actually doesn't. We're within that over 99% uptime. We're, you know, frankly, well within the standards of the web and keeping things up and going. So we're not keeping people alive through life support on the site. So 100% uptime is a little less critical. Not that's not important, but as far as keeping a service-oriented site up, we do keep it up quite a bit, actually, in the grand scheme of things.
Yeah, which lets me plug the fact that we got a new FX Guide TV on Captain America that you guys might like. Interestingly, we're allowed to publish the Captain America video interviews on Captain America. We're not allowed to publish the written piece just yet. But that's just the nature of dealing with Disney. And we love those guys. They're terrific. But it's sometimes slightly incongruous what we're allowed to do and not do. But yeah, so there's a VFX show on NOAA. There's this great FX Guide TV on Captain America where John and I were at ILM. Talking to the guys, and then there's also an RC recorded on the last day, I think it was, or the last second last day of NAB with Jason Wingrove and I, which John put in a brief appearance on. But all those three podcasts are up on FX Guide if you want to, you know, while away some interesting hours listening to the docile tones of
that. Yeah, just, George, man, Mike, just that work on the helicarrier that we got just that one-on-one run through with. It was just crazy insane what they did in comparison from the first one to the second one and all the additional ones that they had to add. It was really a couple really great interviews. And like I said, it's happy that we have those in public because I was there helping Mike film in addition to the ILM NOAA stuff that we have as an FX Insider bonus there. So really check those out. Really cool information and technique as part of those interviews.
And just a segue from that, that some of those interviews also appeared in the first week's Background Fundamentals, where we sat down with artists and talked about their careers and, you know, their recommendations on things to do with how they use the software, how they got into the industry. I found that a really interesting chat, and we were really great to be able to provide that. That's only available, of course, to PhD members, but if you're listening to this podcast, that's probably you. And that's, you know, your free Background Fundamentals, which is available each week from the downloads page. You don't need to sign up for that. It's just available. It doesn't count as part of your downloads.
Yeah, and that just also just a heads up to people that we definitely still have as part of the interim, we still have the referral bonus, something that we like. It's really had great support from our members in the past, kind of helping spread the word about the courses, things that they find interesting, experiences at FX PhD. And as part of that, when people sign up, there's a little box that they can enter your username in. And if they enter your username, you actually will get a free additional bonus course that comes along with that. We kind of go through those about once a week, and we just basically add that to your schedule and make it available to you. And, you know, we have been known in the past, too, if you don't have a course this term, we like to get it as part of this term. But if there's not a course that you have, you know, we don't actually mind carrying that over in the future terms as well. So we really appreciate the support of all of you who help spread the word about FX PhD, because while we have a lot of information about the site ourselves, I don't know, I think it really resonates, I guess, with people to hear it from actual users who are taking their curriculum. Sometimes in hearing in your words as a member of FX PhD, there's stuff that you point out that maybe actually we haven't seen in the past before. So it's really helpful to us. So thanks to those of you who actually done that.
Oh, I totally back John. This is completely appreciate you guys when you do that stuff. We really, yeah, it's awesome. Referrals are some of the most valuable things that you guys do for us, and we really appreciate it.
Yeah, in today's world, it happens a lot. It's much more effective, frankly, than banner ads or money that we would spend on banner ads and things like that. So that's great. Hey, one thing about the term, you mentioned the Background Fundamentals course. One thing that I know Ludo, those of you who are taking the second digital map painting course, I know Ludo's really interested in getting you guys to post your work in the forums and share your work as part of that course. He's really in the ready to help review that, and actually some of the review part will be actually integral as part of the course. But frankly, we talked about it before, but it's a really great opportunity to get feedback from, you know, senior digital mapping like Ludo works at DNEG. It's really an invaluable part of the FX PhD membership. So if you don't take advantage of that, you really are missing out on something by not doing that. And likewise, it actually, that aspect of things also actually turns out to be a great way to learn from others' work as well, to kind of see that. Getting that kind of client review or that review that you might get on the job, I think, is really useful and actually eye-opening, frankly, to help you improve your skills.
Hmm.
So Ludo is very much, it's hard. Begging is maybe one word, but it really is. I mean, it really he's here and waiting to actually help you guys get better at what you do and create better digital map paintings. And so I hope everyone will take advantage of that this term.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, what have you been up to, my friend? I know I was, and we talked a little bit about NAB last week because I got back from that, which was crazy. But what's been going on down under?
Usual kind of stuff. We're trying to, you know, set up the all-time record for the most amount of rain in the month of April. it's an interesting time for us because it's quite different, I think, than the US. We're about to hit Easter. And Easter's a big holiday in Australia. It's taken very seriously and no one works. And then right after that, we have my birthday, which is a national parade, of course. And then the day after that is Anzac Day, which is, again, a public holiday. So it's a bunch of short weeks. So, you're cramming really hard to get everything done to fit stuff in. I think it's equivalent of like your Thanksgiving.
Right.
In that kind of sense. Yeah.
But yeah.
Different time of the year. And I think I mentioned this before. I had people come out from America who were just stunned that we didn't actually celebrate Thanksgiving. They were like, what? It's like, well, we're not giving thanks.
That's not right.
What happened with your founding fathers? But yes, we do give thanks at Easter in much the same kind of way. It's very much family time, though, of course, peppered with the obligatory buying of chocolate eggs.
Yes, same here in the States. It's actually not, as you point out, it's not as big as Thanksgiving, but obviously a very big holiday, again, I guess, based upon in our Christian heritage, coming over from Europe, similar to, I guess, you guys. But over time, Thanksgiving and the foundation of that has grown to be a larger holiday here in the States. So that will be enjoyable. Have a couple days off.
Yeah, so been doing that and catching up on stuff in the office. We've been modifying our some of our workflows and recabling and running stuff through the roof, which is great, and patching up from the bastard that broke into our offices.
Yeah, that was actually, my first thought was, I'm glad no one was there when that happened. I mean, I know a lot of the burglaries like that are opportunities. Yeah, but I'm happy that no one was actually hurt or injured or gotten an altercation from that, right? But frankly, most of those are generally opportunist type things, I think, versus like,
no, this one was pretty deliberate. Yeah. So what happened is they hid in a disused part of the floor and then broke in from that to an air conditioning area that broke into an air conditioning duct that got them over a wall to when they went straight to where some computers were stored and crowbarred that door open, which was a locked security door. So they obviously brought tools with them and then lifted just the most expensive kit that was new and it's insured. So, you know, that's fine. And that's it. Didn't touch anything else and left. So I will say this. I commend the Sydney police when we reported it. Like we had four policemen and one forensic scientist, I guess, a police person there, you know, really quickly. And they were incredibly professional and diligent and worked out everything. So,
Well, yeah, not good, but glad. I don't, like I said, glad everyone's okay and that wasn't an issue in the whole thing. So
no, nothing, nothing irreplaceable, nothing that isn't backed up, nothing that isn't. In fact, it was, yeah. As break-ins go, it's obviously an annoyance for insurance and, you know, generally having to rebuild doors that have been smashed in, but it was, I think it was a surgical strike. And so measures have been taken, you know, the new guard dogs, the intercontinental ballistic missiles, the taser guns, you know, let's just say if they come back again, they're not going to be walking out.
Wow. Hey, speaking
Go ahead. It, sorry, I was going to say, it is just, it wasn't relevant in our case. But it just is a huge underline over the importance of backing stuff up. But also I'd say this, backing stuff up and not having the backup in the same location as the computer, because this wasn't the case. But imagine like I'd left my laptop there and my backup was a, Drobo or something like that. If they'd lifted both of those, you've lost your computer and your backup. And, mostly I think we talk about backups in terms of people losing because of machine failure, or coffee going down at all, getting nicked at a plane kind of airport scenario. But in fact, if someone breaks into your office, I know a lot of people that have their backups in the same place as their computers. And if somebody came in and did heavily break into a facility and lifted a lot of stuff, they can actually lift not only the backup, but the source, and you're dead in the water then. So I guess backing up to the cloud is a increasingly more viable option for many, many people. Isn't so much here because we're sort of our internet, counts the megabytes that get transferred. So less people are keen to have stuff automatically happening in the background that's going to really kick into their download limits. But certainly in the States, I know a lot of people back up to the cloud, and that's obviously a terrific solution. But the importance of backing up, and the importance of backing up in such a way that if something happened, that also echoes what happened to Jason Diamond. He had a fire in his house in the room that he kept all his computer gear in. And again, same thing applies, right? If a backup and the computer are in the same room, you're toast. And it is much harder to have them in separate locations, but man, it's important to do it.
Yeah. Yeah. Say the least.
Yeah. So that's the first thing that happened. Honestly, the first thing that I thought of when it happened was, okay, well, we've got offsite backups. So then I discovered the extent of it and what had gone on. But, I was thinking, okay, we should be good. The other stuff you can kind of deal with, the doors and stuff. It's kind of annoying, obviously, you bastard. But it's not going to set the business back in any way, shape or form.
Right. Yeah, for sure. Ouch. Well, whew. Good deal. So actually, you mentioned the cloud. One of the things that was interesting at the at NAB is just the number of booths and little pods that were part of the Amazon services booth. It's really fascinating year over year to see that booth area grow week after week or year after year after year. More and more companies there. I mean, Otoy was there. You had the folks at Sonet, of course, that we're kind of partner with as well. But that's really, from a facility standpoint, more and more, I think, coming to fruition, especially as they work through some of the security concerns and so forth related to, working with movie studios and things like that. But it was very interesting to see that, I think, really hitting, frankly, it's been mainstream, but I think we're seeing it more and more as people's bandwidth's getting higher to higher. It's making more sense.
Can I ask
you
a question about that?
Yeah.
Because I was talking to somebody that was at NAB, and they were saying that one of the things they noticed was a lot of companies in those sort of support roles talking about and mentioning Adobe Anywhere's Premiere-type products. And there's a slow-ish rollout from Anywhere, but it seems like it's still got a lot of support from Adobe, and other people were talking about it.
Are you sure they weren't confused by Avid Anywhere? Maybe confusing those two because they sound so similar? No,
there was
sorry.
An Avid Anywhere?
An Avid Anywhere versus Adobe Everywhere. Anyway,
really?
I'm joking. No, I'm not joking actually about that, but yes, that's their Avid's phrase. It's called Avid Everywhere. If you go to avid.com/everywhere, that's what they're calling
it. You just said it the other way around. You just said that it was Avid.
Oh, I'm yeah. Well, see, that's what I'm.
Anywhere.
Yes,
it's
I'm sorry.
Premiere it's Anywhere, isn't it?
Yes. Yes, I'm sorry.
Avid Everywhere.
That. Avid Everywhere. See, I'm even confused by it. Yes.
Well, yeah.
Yeah, I know.
But one that I liked the most about that was when HD was the first appearing. Kodak came out with film HD, just to confuse the market. Just like you bastards, and the whole idea was that it was high definition film, but that didn't help trying to explain to clients why HD was different to filmed, different to SD. It was like, yeah, just like somebody was like, yeah, we can really annoy people. That was like a vicious Kodak, I didn't appreciate it thing that they did. So, okay. So
anyway, sorry. Now that I've confused everything. Yes. Adobe Anywhere, Avid Everywhere. But yes, I think one of the things with Adobe Anywhere is still partly caused by them with this whole Anywhere moniker, because they're still very much interested in large part being able to do this. in a local facility, right?
Yeah, because in of the region. Yeah.
Because of the latency issues. Yeah. I've explained to talk people a lot. So between my computer here in Los Angeles and Mike's computer at the office in Sydney, I believe it's 4 or 5 hops. Basically hits the router here, hits the router in Sydney, and then hits Mike's machine, right? So you think anywhere on the internet, that would be a really useful thing for Adobe Anywhere between the two of us. But frankly, latency is still an issue, the time it takes actually for the data to get from here in Los Angeles, traveling across the Pacific and so forth.
And we've got good internet between.
Yes, we have very good. Yeah, I mean, 4 pings, right? And it's fast. Yeah. But it's a latency issue, which is one thing. And they've been adding and correcting that a little bit more and more and talking to them. But I think that's part of the slow rollout. And in a way, I think it's a bit sensible in a way. I mean, I think to actually get the kinks working, get the kinks out, get it working on their, you know, in a local environment with serious hardware, with a tech support staff that is able to actually support the users before they actually try and start rolling this technology out to a wider audience. They're starting to integrate more After Effects kind of functionality with that, with the sharing of things within After Effects. But, you know, at this point, it's getting traction with larger installations, I feel, and shared media, you know, similar to what you can do with, in many ways, parallels to what you can do with Avid as far as shared media. But, yeah, I think they're just, I just think they're taking sensible steps and rolling it out to a wider audience. I think that's going to happen. You know, the idea and potential of, can you do After Effects rendering in the cloud, for instance? What's it going to take to do that? Are you going to have a huge wall and adoption of that just in the time that it takes to upload your material to actually render the stuff in the cloud? But I think they're being pretty sensible about it moving forward.
The only thing I'd say is they kind of announced that they were going to do Anywhere in September 2012, and then they sort of went real with it around
a year ago.
A year ago, yeah.
Yeah.
So in, let's say, for argument's sake, mid to late 2013, it feels like that's when we were doing our stuff, in about mid-June, was it? July 2013, you and I were doing those tests and stuff.
Yep.
And so now I would have expected that the rollout would have been a little quicker. I do know, as you say, like, that the people that they are rolling out with are big, serious customers. Then this is less of a sort of focus on individual user for obvious reasons. So those big users want, you know, bulletproof, working well performance. And so if you are one of those bigger customers that have negotiated in a position to work with Adobe, they're taking you really seriously. So I'm not saying that they're neglecting it anyway, but I do think that we'd want to see a bit more movement on that, you know, certainly in the next quarter to 6 months, because, you know, otherwise I think they would have announced it too early. That sort of, you'd expect something to be happening pretty solidly within inside 2 years of announcement.
Yeah, I mean, well, the fact is though that it is there and available to the customers that they're talking about, right? I mean, you know, it's like, I mean, there's Anywhere as people think of it using the cloud, and then there's Anywhere, which is actually a an almost not quite turnkey system, but a very specific spec'd out server system as well as hardware requirements. So I think there's, you know, there's the, I guess, I think to your point, it's, I don't think they're being necessarily very clear about that aspect of things. They're kind of putting this, look, it's cloud collaborative workflow, when in the reality, it's actually not, you know, so they have this promise that they're marketing. That's not the reality of it, I guess, right? That's the, it's interesting. So,
but get back to my initial question before we got sidetracked. Did you see anything about it at NAB? Was anyone talking about it? Because somebody said that they thought that it was very much for certain types of vendors in the South Hall, like people really aware of it.
Adobe Anywhere?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I didn't actually see it in different booths. I saw some of it. I forget what other booth it was. I mean, they certainly had presentations regarding it as part of the Adobe Stand, for sure, and it had a presence at the Adobe Stand. But I didn't see it at other booths, which, do you know specifically what booths it was at? Because I actually totally missed that, if it was.
Right.
I did not actually see that. I saw other aspects of the Adobe product, for instance, the NVIDIA booth, some of the 4K real-time debayering of R3D files that are part of the new workflow in Adobe Premiere Pro, which is pretty impressive. You know, you look at that and you go, okay, it's debayering in real time. it seems like it's doing it. So that's look good. But I saw things like that on the show floor, but I didn't see anything specifically related to anywhere myself.
Well, I hope it works. I do really hope it works. I'm really keen to follow up on it myself.
Yeah, you were testing it. I mean, you're yeah. in the early days. Actually, I think probably even be right at the release. Last year we were trying it out and kind of said, okay, well, this is, might work for you guys down there in Sydney, but the idea of having me access it, and especially the guys from Chicago access the same thing, we kind of ruled it out at that point. And Adobe told us that it probably wasn't going to work, in full disclosure. It wasn't designed for what we were trying to get it to do between Sydney and Los Angeles, between Sydney and Chicago.
The other thing is, if you get it working really well, you want to be getting it working really well, normally with an asset management, file management system. It's like it's a big bite of a cherry. It's not just whack on a new version of some software. You'd want to set up your workflows to accommodate that and to be able to handle it, naming structures, all that kind of stuff. So it's a proper commitment. But that being said, it's what I thought we might get from, what was it, Final Cut? What was the version of Final Cut? It was Final Cut. They had that Final
Server?
Cut server, wasn't it?
Yeah.
It was Final Cut server, yeah. We tried that as well. And that more kind of with it on the vine rather than... whereas this, I feel, just having a slower, more deliberate rollout. I'm definitely not thinking Adobe is mismanaging it, because I prefer this than rushing it out and having it fall over.
But at some point...
Yeah, at some point it'd be nice if it was a more standardized, easier to get into kind of...
Yeah. Yeah. Certainly, I agree. I agree. And, we didn't talk about it before, but very much. But I think some couple interesting software announcements by them prior to NAB. We just had a little bit of a quick take article highlighting some of those things. I think we talked about Adobe does a nice job promoting that. But continuing on with some nice features in that, and we saw that at NAB as well, with a very much kind of a focus on some broadcast type things from the Premiere Pro and Speed Grade tag team, I think, as well. That's very much where, at least I took from some of the presentations at the Adobe booth, you could see that was very much their focus, which is, in the end, I think a good thing in expanding it out to a wider audience and making sure that, they generate enough money to keep it going and further development on that. But one thing we didn't talk about, and I'm curious if you and or Jimmy has mentioned his reaction on Resolve 11, which is, again, they're really doing some impressive updates for Resolve.
Yeah. Now, Resolve 11 isn't quite out yet, is it?
No, it's not. No. Yeah. What is it, real soon now, I think? But in talking RSA. To Peter Chamberlain at the show. But I give him credit for the incredible pace of development and adding new features and really creating an incredibly compelling product. I'm curious how far you can take the editing now at this point, because in our workflow, correct me if I'm wrong, but in general, Jimmy is taking things into Resolve for Final Pass on everything, isn't he, still?
We definitely do that.
And it seems like, a lot of the editing that we do is not incredibly complex or long. The FX Guide TV apps are a sensible-sized project that I'm ready to almost give it a go in the new version of Resolve with what they have added.
Really? I think the new raw image color grading controls
are really
interesting. But I hadn't thought that you'd go so far as to suggest we actually edit.
It's at the point where I didn't feel that way last year. I'm like, yeah, there's not enough there. But I'm starting to think and talking and looking at it at NAB for some of the stuff. And I'm working on the Flame 2015 interview that I did with Philippe Soureau, kind of thinking, I'm wondering, how far could I take it? And just the idea of being able to do a nice color pass and have it all integrated, there are some benefits. Maybe it's not quite as nice, but maybe there are some benefits to having it all integrated within that tool set. So not sold on it, but the other thing is we've talked about many times on the DOD, I'm comfortable with Premiere Edit workflow finally now. I can find my way around it, work with it really quickly. It does its job. Yeah. So it's going to take it's going to take really good integration to kind of push it for me over the edge into that. But
so the trouble is, though, that if something was going to make me push over the edge, it would be the color grading.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, that's the one thing that you go, I'm not going to grade this in Premiere. This is not because sensible to grade.
No,
it's nowhere
slower.
Near the kind of controls you want. So, yeah, you would need a really good reason. Like, let's say we're sitting here right now and we didn't have Blackmagic doing this with DaVinci. You'd go, well, what would make you change from Premiere right now?
Right.
And you'd be thinking, well, it'd have to be something really big. And most people would think that would be adding in more effects stuff. And to a certain extent, you know, you could argue that could be a way that we're going to end up seeing stuff happen with Nuke Studio. But a whole different approach is mm-hmm. just saying, hey, your editing ain't that hard, but your color grading, that really, you know, kicks it. And so this isn't an add-on of color grading. This is the other way around, where you're getting phenomenal color grading. I mean, how long ago was it that a DaVinci desk was the, you know, $300,000 Rolls Royce in the suite?
Yeah, it's really, really amazing. I mean, again, they're, you know, $1,000 for their software, and then you get their decked out stuff with the Surface for close to $30,000, which is still incredibly affordable in the grand scheme of things, right?
But even if you don't have the Surface, you don't have the DaVinci that you can run with software is not DaVinci Lite. It's not the toy version that if you spend the $30,000, you get a proper version. DaVinci works really well.
Yeah, it's
a really good piece of software.
It does. And even with the integration, Mike, I think the thing is that right now I am personally still doing the grading in Premiere. But with the interchange that happens now, well, just in case I have to make a change or do something different, right? I have to go back and blah, blah, blah. But now even... Yeah, I know. But that's what... But you could... Actually, now, if they're fairly minor change, I mean, the changes, frankly, that we make in the edits are me and you giving each other and Jeff giving each other feedback or catching something that's wrong, you know, versus like totally reworking the edit at that point. But, you know, still maybe, so, you know, maybe I'll maintain that final edit in Resolve and start making those final changes and tweaks in Resolve as opposed to going back to Premiere, regenerating anything and doing it that way. So I wouldn't have to start the creative edit from scratch in Resolve because the XML support is really quite good within Resolve. I don't really have a big problem with that. So anyway, this is something we didn't touch on last week from NAB, but I thought that was a really notable software. Again, another notable software release from, you know, the team at the Resolve team at Blackmagic.
Somebody said to me they were pushing the enhanced editing features and round tripping with Final Cut, and I was like, my eyes glassed over that point, I don't care. But yeah, but then I started hearing about the raw sort of photography type grading stuff, and I was, well, now that's sort of getting interesting, because you know, it is the case that I grade stills a lot and spend time on them and really enjoy doing that work as much as I do clips, but you can be a bit more creative sometimes with stills because they're more aesthetic pieces rather than functional narrative pieces. And then I started hearing about this editing, but I think it's June. I think I remember that correctly. I remember thinking, well, I can't get onto it right now, so I put it to one side.
Right.
But yes, no, I think it's tremendous. And I think we certainly did on the RC podcast, you know, they work in cameras as well.
Right.
And that is all good stuff because they're continuing to develop stuff. And this is a very positive aspect of the company. They don't buy products and shelve them. They don't buy products to get the patents and then just hide them. My God, they bought the Cintel stuff and they produced this killer $23,000, whatever it is, you know, film transfer box that looks like a Bang & Olufsen. So they're not taking stuff and letting it wither on the vine. They really put some juice behind it and continue it. And Resolve is an absolute sort of lighthouse account for that. But also, I would say with the cameras, they're continuing to learn, listen to people, and loop back with better and better cameras. So points to them.
Yeah, another and one of their main competitors from a hardware standpoint is AGA, of course. And again, we talked a little bit in the RC, Jason did, about the new camera from AGA, but I just want to give a shout out for a really cool box. It's somewhat related to my Reluctant Sysadmin course that's running again this term. Part of that course, the final epic class, which turned out to be three classes in one effectively, because the material is their new LUT box. They have an incredible value, $695 for a box that takes SDI in and outputs both SDI as well as HDMI, which you can apply a 3D LUT to that. And if you're doing any kind of color grading, you really want to get your hands on a LUT box if you're doing that, because you can certainly do a hardware calibration on a monitor. You can get using things like SpectraCal, CalMan, that I showed as part of that course. You can get your monitor much closer, much better, but for that final push into a really true calibrated monitor, a critical aspect of that is having a LUT box where you can actually apply a 3D LUT to the signal that goes into that LUT to further correct it. Basically what happens is you would take an uncorrected signal and feed it to your monitor, and then hook up a probe and profile your monitor. Basically the software sends it a whole bunch of different colors and actually gets a profile for your monitor, measuring what your monitor is outputting versus what it should be, and actually builds a 3D LUT to actually do that difference between those things for you. So you basically feed an uncorrected signal to the monitor, run through profile that monitor, and then the software will build a 3D LUT, which will actually correct that signal coming to your monitor so it displays correctly. And you take that 3D LUT, load it into this external box over USB, and voila, you've got a really nice color-graded, affordable monitor. Of course, the higher quality monitor that you purchase, the better it's going to be. But the LUT box is actually a critical aspect of that. And $700 at this point is really affordable compared to some of the other options out there. I covered as part of that class the Fuji box, which is really fantastic as well, and that's currently shipping. But it's nice to see, nice to see AJA coming up with something like that. That was my favorite thing that AJA announced at the show.
Yeah. They're a good company.
Yeah, very, very, very solid, good hardware, making sensible products. And I think in the RC we mentioned that their new camera is attempting to do many things to make it more appealing to traditional, I think, TV studios and videographers who are used to traditional video cameras.
Just has a much smaller LED / iPad strapped to the side of it than the Blackmagic camera does.
And they're quite quite proud of their padded shoulder thing that the Diamond Brothers, I think one of the Diamond Brothers pointed out, yeah, but it's not adjustable. But yes, they were point by point, I think, taking on some of the other cameras out there from Blackmagic to, I would say, even Red at some point, though designed for a different audience. Probably more targeted to Blackmagic than Red, I think. Mm. So anyway, that was a bit of cool stuff that we saw at AJA, saw at the show last week that we didn't get a chance to talk about. I think we talked a lot about some of the Flame stuff, some of the Autodesk announcements in last week's DOD, but I got a little bit lost in the mix.
Yes. Well, obviously it was useful at one of us went.
Yeah. I think it's sensible consideration. You're going to be coming over for Seagraph. Probably maybe even go to Seagraph Asia. I'm going to head over to FMX. So we're still very much covered, I think. I like the divide and conquer. I very much especially enjoy not traveling less and concentrating more on FX Guide and FX PhD day-to-day work, frankly, because it does take a lot out of you. It's a big ask to spend time traveling. You actually have to look at it and say, is this really what we need both, especially when we're both there? Is this really what we both need to be doing? Right?
Yes.
Very true. All right, my friend. Well, I got to get going. I'm still getting caught up from being away a week away at NAB and as well as prepping for FMX. But again, guys, check out the forums for those of you who are going to FMX. We'll be posting when the meetup will be. Really enjoy getting together with the European crew because, you know, well, yes, actually, with reference to everyone else and everywhere else that I've traveled, the Euro crew, much, much better
at turning up for meetups. You also like the English pub crowd.
Yeah,
or do you count the English in the Euros? See, that's interesting. Do you think of the English as part of the European community?
Yes, because at the UK, because it's easier, I think, to get over to the UK, the Euro crowd joins. And when I'm talking about the guy, you know, folks from France, Spain, Sweden, Denmark, Norway, much more inclined to come over to a UK meetup than they would, obviously, say, an LA meetup for obvious reasons. So, yes, I'll put that in the same crowd, I guess.
And it sounds like your dog wants your attention.
That's actually not my dog, believe it or not. My dog's the quiet one. Anyway. But yes, need some attention. So anyway, thanks so much, everyone, for taking time to listen. If you haven't joined FXPhD, it's the second week. Those of you who've been members in the past know it's still a great time to join. Lots of time to get caught up from the first week of classes, but I think the first week has been a lot of fun. I have had the time to check out some of the classes and really enjoyed them. So if you're not a member, I think you're missing out on something.
Yeah, and if there's anything you guys can do with that referral thing, we really appreciate it. So thank you.
Yeah, thanks, guys, and we'll talk to you. We'll try and talk to you next week from FMX. Maybe we'll do our this week with our guests at the meetup. Can be a
hey, that'd be fun.
Meetup / podcast. So anyway, thanks, guys, for listening. We'll talk to you whenever we do. Bye.
See you. Bye.
Thanks for listening. This podcast is copyright FX PhD.